Well, I think first of all, it's undeniable Southwest is a major player, but really, I think what there's in Southwest is a metaphor for the low-cost carriers. Southwest, AirTran, JetBlue, there are a number of very vital low-cost carriers that do provide some assurance against predatory pricing or extraordinary rents being extracted from markets due to lack of competition. So I think while Southwest is the best known and the most successful, and certainly is a significant player in terms of domestic point-to-point airline carriers, it's more what Southwest represents in terms of the market structure, if you will.
And so are there enough low-cost carriers to let's assume for a second that Continental and United gets together, and now we have – and then that would be the largest, I think, airline in the world. And so
right.
We would have the first largest and the second largest. And are there enough low-cost carriers to ameliorate the fear that these big behemoth carriers would be able to set the market rate and higher fares, for instance?
Well, that's an empirical question. It could really only be resolved by the development of actual fact. In other words, we really don't know. But what we do know is that the impact of low cost, low fare carriers on the industry has been profound, and their market share has been growing steadily. So, I mean, it's going to be an interesting laboratory because the argument in favor of combination between, let's say, Delta Northwest and Continental United and American and pick somebody, okay, would be two things. First of all, you get some increased efficiencies by virtue of having to run a simpler single reservation system and greater economies of scale for the administrative structures and the financial investments. Presumably, you could reduce some overlapping route structures and take advantage of opportunities there, and perhaps build even stronger brand loyalty because you'd be able to offer more choices under the same brand name, which is really happening a bit under code sharing arrangements today anyway. But and then the other possibility, of course, is this notion of monopoly or near monopoly pricing power that would enable these larger combined airlines to exert some or realize some higher revenues as well as reduce costs. So it's an interesting question. I think had this series of events occurred, right after deregulation, it would have been more problematic and more likely to result in some difficulties in the market than having them happen now, where frankly the only parts of the industry that are making any money are the low-cost, low-fare carriers. It is really hard for a lot of us to understand how you can take two high-cost competitors, put them together, and suddenly create a low-cost competitor. That's somehow not intuitive to us. But be that as it may, the market is significantly different today than it was even 20 years ago. And the low-cost, low-fare carriers are increasingly calling the tune in terms of pricing and competitive realities.
Well, now, if you're looking at it from their side of things, the low-cost folks, if you're running the show at one of those tonight, are you at all concerned about this particular merger? Does that change any way that you would do business as a low-cost carrier now?
Well, that's a good question. I think as long as I have significant cost advantages, until I can see that these combined legacy carriers are going to be able to get their costs more in line with mine, I'm not too worried. I can still provide service at a at a better margin, essentially, because I'm operating at a lower cost than they're going to operate at. So I seriously doubt they're losing a lot of sleep over it. I mean, they're not ignoring it, and they're certainly thinking about it, and it does change the competitive landscape for them. You know, they probably now have to change the way they analyze entry into new markets a little bit, instead of thinking about, well, you know, what are our chances of being successful against, let's say, Northwest? Now they have to think about what are our chances of being successful against Northwest and Delta combined. Should Northwest and Delta decide they really don't want us in this market, that sort of business. That's just the nature of the dynamics of business, and those kinds of conversations and those kinds of concerns go on all the time.
Sure. Now, the other aspect of this, as I said, people have been writing me wanting to find out whether there's any chance Southwest would go into a market like in Atlanta or, in our case, in Minneapolis-St. Paul. People have always wanted, I guess, Southwest to come
right
in here. But they wouldn't, right? They don't generally take on the big airlines on their own turf, do they?
Well, they have done it in a few instances. They've done it, but the conditions have to be exactly right for them. They don't take on people just for the sake of competing. They take on people head on because they believe that they have an opportunity to win market share and sustain it. So one of the things they look for are the availability of gates at underserved or underutilized airports. They look for the right mix of business and leisure travel. They look for opportunities to establish their brand in markets where in essence they perceive a weakness on the part of the existing competitors, and they're very, very methodical and meticulous about their entry into markets. I mean, they don't. I'll use an example other than Southwest. I mean, the last sort of head-to-head competition that we now have some results on was the entry by AirTran into Milwaukee, and you know it was fought rather it was resisted by Midwest, but at the end of the day, you know, it looks to have been a very successful venture on the part of AirTran. In other words, they're basically now capturing a large share of the Milwaukee market, which had before that really been pretty much a Midwest Express or Midwest Airlines market, but they did that because it made sense for them and because they perceived a weakness in their competition there, and candidly, you know, Milwaukee's close enough to Chicago, it wasn't considered a major market anyway, in the sense that it was people from the north side of Chicago could be induced to drive a little further to go to Milwaukee to catch flights, but it was more a regional market than a national market there.
Sure. So that would be like a Southwest flying to Manchester, New Hampshire instead of Boston, but people.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I mean, traditionally Southwest doesn't go head to head against major established network carriers in heavily utilized airports. So, for example, in Chicago, Southwest established themselves in Midway, as opposed to O'Hare. That's not to say they don't fly into some major airports. They do. They fly into LAX and they fly into other major airports. But in the New York market, for example, they go into Islip. You know, I mean, they're very careful about how they choose to enter a market, and they choose to do it on their terms, not on the terms of either the existing competitors or the airports.
Sure. Two more questions, or really one, I guess, and I'll let you go. I'm getting a lot of email from folks who are overly concerned, or not overly concerned, but concerned about the future of the regional carriers. And I think that this is because the folks up at North Dakota State and folks that feed into the regional carriers are very concerned about their future. In the investors, or maybe it was the regular news conference today, they used the phrase, if I can find it here, Delta has Comair, and Northwest has Compass and Masaba.
Right.
And the phrase they used is these carriers will have to find the right, I don't have the exact quote here, but the right mix. But it sounded suspiciously like there would be some reductions in the workforce around the regional airlines. Does that make any sense?
Well, they've had very different strategies with respect to the regionals in one sense. I mean, Delta has gone from owning the regionals, their feeder airlines, if you will, to spinning them off, and then competing almost head to head with them. And so it's been an interesting relationship. I guess if I were just to look at the map, I'd be most concerned if I were in Cincinnati about what all this might mean to Comair and some of the relationships there, because it's hard to see how you can maintain that many hubs in a system that is the largest in the world and do it efficiently. So clearly they're going to want to discipline. They're going to want discipline to flow through the whole system. So not just for the aircraft that are flying their own colors, but their regional feeder airlines as well. We just saw Delta basically discipline the Mesa Airlines, who'd had a long time relationship with them, and their quality and their performance were falling below what Delta needed them to be, and they basically said, you're done. I don't think there's any reason for people to think that these relationships will go on forever, just because they always have, or they have for years. I mean, I think the expectations are going to change, and it'll be up to the regionals to figure out whether they can, in fact, compete and continue to provide value to the new Delta over its expanded range of operations.
I did find a quote that I did such a poor job of.
Oh, that's okay.
It was, we'll be optimizing the number of, this is in terms of regional now, we'll be optimizing the number of carriers to maximize the efficiency of the carriers. Our goal is to have the margins in that business be equivalent to mainline airlines. And so it was the English translation of that.
Basically, they said the same thing, which is the regionals are going to be expected to operate under sustainable business models, just like the mainline or the legacy carriers will, I'm not aware of the current operating margins for the regionals that are serving the two systems today. So I really can't tell you whether that's threatening news or welcome news or frankly no news at all for the regionals that are in place. You know, I guess the real question would be the communities that are served by the regionals. I mean, do they have reason to expect that their service will increase under this new regime, and that's a different question. That goes to the sort of economic vitality and viability of a particular city pair more than it does to whether you're served by an aircraft flying the Delta flag or one flying a Masaba or a Comair colors.
It sounded like, I think it was Richard Anderson saying today, or maybe it was Steenland, I'm not sure, but that they wanted to move more 100-seat airplanes onto some of these smaller routes. Apparently it's getting harder to make ends meet with the regional jets, I guess. And in Northwest's routes, that would mean DC-9s, I guess, which is pretty inefficient, something they wanted to phase out. It's a pretty old fleet, right? I mean, what is the challenge they face there with 100-seat airplanes?
Well, anything under 100 seats right now, it's really hard to make money because of the cost of fuel. The economics have turned against the regional jets that with capacities below 100 seats. So what you're likely to see is some investment. I mean, if it makes sense to buy some Embraers and some additional regional jets at 100 to 120, 115 seats in order to serve those markets and get rid of or excess the smaller regional jets, then that's it could in fact lead to higher volume operations in some of the smaller communities. Now, that said, you know, they're gonna rationalize their service around demand. So if currently the demand for 120 seats, or let's say 200 seats a day, and they're doing it with 370 seat aircraft, chances are they're going to reduce service to 200 seat aircraft to the same market until demand demonstrates that they need to add additional aircraft.
The economics of it, though, would it be acquiring an Embraer or I mean, they're not talking. I mean, we're not talking about practicality. Bringing back the DC-9, right? The DC-9 today is done, isn't it?
Well, you know, these things take time to work themselves out. I mean, if a particular market can sustain the economics of an inefficient and relatively old aircraft like a DC-9, and it's already available, then you know there's no reason why they wouldn't use a DC-9. But as they're thinking longer term, as they're going through their longer term fleet planning process and thinking about which aircraft do we need to acquire for certain kinds of uses. Basically, what they're signaling, I think, more than anything, is that the current economics do not favor regional jets or any jets below 100 seats, primarily because of price of fuel, and so you know they might well be trying to buy additional larger RJs in the 100-115 seat category, something like that. As opposed to taking delivery on maybe some orders they already have in place for 70-seat RJs.